You're listening to Red Nation Online.
A very good day to you, and welcome to From the Black Hole, Episode 5, with Lars Lowther and Jeff Salisbury. And I'm Rob Notenboom. On the podcast today, we discuss the Canadian women's national team, recent performance at the Cyprus Cup, some local developments in our home province of Saskatchewan, and we finish it off with a discussion of our Canadian MLS teams and their performance so far this season. Well, welcome back to From the Black Hole. We're excited to be back, and we've actually got some big news. And if you're listening to this, you might already know that news because this is where you may have found us. We've been I'm not sure what the word is.
We feel very lucky. Project.
I guess so. We have been picked up by Red Nation Online, so you might be listening to this through Red Nation Online, or you might be one of the few friends of ours who have listened to episodes 1 through 4, which were all posted on YouTube. But we're very excited and very pleased that we're going to be speaking to potentially a larger audience of very committed soccer followers. So thanks very much to Red Nation Online for picking us up, and we hope to do you proud with what we talk about.
So when do we get to start our celebrity fan pages?
Yeah, no doubt.
I already have mine started.
Do you?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I've never seen it mentioned anywhere.
No. Yeah, neither have I.
Well, it's just my normal Facebook page.
Oh, there you go. There
or Twitter. Oh, you can follow me on Twitter. I only have 209 followers.
Well, that's way more than I have.
I feel like I'm doing a big disservice to myself by only having 209. Most of them are robots as well, so.
Yeah.
I have about 30, so I'm way behind you there. Anyway, to the topic at hand. First off, we're going to talk very briefly about the Canadian women's national team and their recent tournament in Cyprus, the Cyprus Cup. And they've done this every year. They've done it for a while. They lost out in the final 1-0. The unfortunate thing with the Cyprus Cup is that we don't really get to see much of the action. We see the highlights, we hear Twitter, or we read Twitter updates. Some people put together some fabricated synopses, which are pretty funny, but unfortunately we don't get a lot of detail. So we unfortunately can't provide a lot of detail either. But Jeff, I think you wanted to say something first off, so we'll go with you. What did you think about the results from the Cyprus Cup?
I think we made it through the group stage as everybody expected. We were the top dog within our group once again, and it seems year after year after year we end up, unless for some reason Sweden ends up coming into the Cyprus Cup, which I don't think's happened for a number of years now, but for most of the last little while it's been us. We've been top dog, and so we're expected to make the final of this competition every time. The fact that we lost, though, a lot of people are not really sure. They're thinking, oh, geez, England. I mean, we beat Team Great Britain in the Olympics to make it to that infamous semifinal match against the States. And so I think a few people kind of found it as a little bit of a shock that we ended up losing to England in the final. But I was fortunate enough to be able to speak with someone who's related to the CSA. And they ended up passing on some really interesting and important information to help put this into perspective a little bit better. But I don't think a lot of people realize that England has been in prep mode for the Women's European Championships now for the last little bit. So they have been training for a few extra months beyond what our ladies have. And so them coming into the Cyprus Cup for the English team, this was really their last little bit of prep before they embark on the women's championship. So they were definitely much, much more informed than we were. We really had only had those three group stage matches before facing the English. And so we definitely were not in that prime competition mode necessarily. And so I think people, just to put it in perspective, everybody needs to just kind of, you know, sit back and relax regarding this. You know, losing to the English in the final, this one isn't that big of a deal for the fact that we really weren't, you know, in the at the same level that they were necessarily in being prepared. Maybe that's kind of the wrong way of putting it, but you know what I mean. They were more match fit than we were, I guess, overall is a way to look at it. So,
and Lars, any thoughts on the Cyprus Cup?
I just add to that. I think we'll just see a lot of change and a better positive result if we were to play them with the NWSL season. I think I got that acronym right. Further down the road, if once that's going and our players are actually playing games and training with basically the best American players, because really that's how you're going to get better is by training with the best on the continent. We'll do better, but at this point in time, I think the point that Jeff raises here about the team not really being prepared or not preparation, I think, is actually probably not the right word. Being match fit, being as ready as England was for this match, I think, you know, it's a really good point on Jeff's part.
And to add to that, in terms of the preparation, it seems that John Herdman is really looking forward, right? I don't think he's looking at the Cyprus Cup as an end result of anything. The 2015 is what his targets are set at, and so he's bringing in some youngsters, mixing up the lineups. And so, you know, it was a bit experimental, some of the things he was doing. Additionally, no Melissa Tancredi. And she had a whale of an Olympic tournament, and we've talked about that on our show here. And but I do want to mention a positive thing, and I can only take this from the short bits of highlights that I saw. But Janelle Foligno seemed to have a very good tournament. She was on the score sheet a few times, provided a nice setup that I saw to one of Sinclair's goals, and it's nice to see her contributing because I thought she had a difficult Olympic tournament.
Once again, I think Sinclair ended up having the highest goal tally throughout, for us at least, through the competition. She missed that first game against the Swiss, but I think she was back for both Finland and the Dutch, wasn't she?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Yeah.
And I mean, once again, you know, I don't know whether we really need to stress about it and feel that we need to be concerned that she's still potting goals. I mean, she's going to be with us certainly until 2015, if not after. So, you know, as long as she keeps potting them at the same rate that she is, you know, all the power to her. So,
you know, the thing that really was obvious in the Olympic tournament, though, was that teams could not key on her, because there was a point where Melissa Tancredi was the leading goal scorer for the team and the leading goal scorer for the tournament. And so when you had that kind of those two weapons, you know, it gave another dimension of the team that I don't think we had prior to that. And now that some of these youngsters with goal scoring abilities are coming up, that just makes us that much more dangerous. If they're really prepared by 2015, I think that bodes well for the team.
You know, it kind of brings up a really interesting thought when you think about it. Now, like, Tank is done now, isn't she? Has she retired from the
No, I think she's at. I think she's at school. Actually, I think she's taken the year off to either finish her school or be at school. And my understanding is she's coming back, although there were rumors that she was done.
Okay, I wasn't sure because, you know, when you think about it, talking about the Olympics, I'm sure Herdman obviously realized that teams were going to target marking Sinclair out of games in order to try and stall our offense, which then they probably underestimated the capabilities of Tank overall. So with Tank, with the thought of Tank not being back, who can we kind of turn to as being that secondary striking threat? Is it Foligno at this point, or you know, who do we kind of turn to be that secondary striking threat? Because, you know, maybe it isn't actually a question of what the heck do we do if we don't have Sinclair, because it's obvious we're going to have her for a number of years still. Maybe it really comes down to a question of, do we have anybody immediately after her that would be able to provide goals when teams are purposely marking Sinclair out of a match? You know, no, with us knowing that and us preparing for that, do we actually have the player that would be able to step up in the way that Tank did during the Olympics moving into the future? So I'm kind of curious to see what new blood develops within the women's national team setup to kind of fill that secondary striker role like Tank has had for the last number of years. So,
so we've talked nationally about some things. It's time to talk locally, and this is these are two pieces of news have come out in the last little while, and they're really important to those of us, especially the three of us who are interested in soccer in the province. Number one, the Whitecaps, I don't want to say established a new training academy in Saskatoon, but they kind of established one by partnering up with an existing one in a way. And secondly, there's been some reform at the Saskatchewan Soccer Association. Jeff is plugged into both of those topics, and we're going to turn to him now for a little bit of description, insight, and analysis of what that means for soccer in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first one definitely is the opening of Whitecaps Academy Saskatchewan, and it's located in Saskatoon. There was already an academy that was running that was partnered with the University of Saskatchewan. It was called the Huskies United Soccer Academy, or HUSA for short. And it's run by Bryce Chapman, and Bryce is the coach of the U of S men's senior soccer team. And he's actually been partnered with the Whitecaps now for a few years. They just finally formalized that partnership in actually migrating HUSA Academy into the fully into the Whitecaps fold to make it the first Whitecaps satellite academy outside of BC. So the Caps already have satellite academies in Burnaby is the main one, I guess. Then I think Delta, Victoria, I believe, and geez, it might be Chilliwack further into the Fraser Valley. But now Saskatoon is home to the first satellite academy for the Whitecaps, which essentially is going to pull players from the entire province and possibly from Alberta and especially Manitoba. I expect this to be the central academy place for the Whitecaps for Manitoba and Saskatchewan. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing an influx of young players coming in from Winnipeg, mostly Winnipeg, maybe a little bit from Brandon, but mostly Winnipeg, coming and joining up with this new Whitecaps Academy Saskatchewan. I assume that they'll probably eventually open up a Whitecaps Academy Winnipeg, although they'll probably have to compete with WSA Winnipeg, which is already established out there. But yeah, it's huge. It's absolutely huge because now there's a formal partnership between the University of Saskatchewan, the HUSA Academy, and the Whitecaps to create this Whitecaps Academy Saskatchewan. They're going to be training out of the SaskTel Sports Center, so they're going to be getting the prime times during the day. They're going to be partnering up a little bit with the what's called the Chargers Academy. There's Centennial Collegiate, the high school, which shares a building with the SaskTel Sports Center, already kind of has an academy, and I know that HUSA already works with them a little bit. So they're going to be sharing resources and time with the SaskTel Sports Center to be able to, and I think all the kids are going to be going to Centennial Collegiate. So it's all going to be centralized in one place. It is a genuine, it's essentially like the Whitecaps residency, but simply in Saskatoon now. So it's huge.
You know, being a high school teacher and seeing the sea change amongst the students that I teach, over the last 10 years, 10 years ago, I teach senior high school, senior grades. So when kids are in my classes that play for, you know, provincial rep teams or some of the better players on clubs, I figure that out pretty fast, right? And but almost none of them ever know anything about the game outside of the fact that they play it. They're not fans. This was 10 years ago. Now, that same cohort of kids I know who they are instantly because, well, usually, unfortunately, it means that they're wearing a Balotelli jersey and I have to harass them about it. But this is exciting. I noticed that you left Regina out, by the way, when you mentioned the cities that might send kids or might draw kids Saskatoon and Canada.
I was speaking about Manitoba in that sense, but I don't like.
Yeah, sure you were.
I don't like talking about dirty Regina when I don't have to, so I try to avoid
man.
That.
Ouch, ouch. Seriously, though, there are kids now that the reason that I mention this, I should explain myself, is that there are very talented athletes that are playing soccer and aren't playing six different sports, aren't committed to playing hockey, and I teach them, and now they also have a passion for the game. 10 years ago, I don't think that they saw it in any larger context, and I think that this will add significantly to that. They'll go, hey, not only can I play this game, I'm a fan of this game, I can potentially get picked up and play this game professionally, and you can see a pathway to that now, whereas it was much more obscure immediately before this announcement. We should turn to your second announcement, though, which was...
Hold on.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, there's
go
one
ahead.
More thing. Two little things, I guess. And for those that that live in Saskatchewan that listen to us, the first thing is, well, to a precursor to this is I was going to actually record the press conference, but my stupid phone is a piece of garbage and it stopped recording after 5 minutes, and that seems to be a preset thing in it, so I probably should have downloaded an app to do this, but I just used the cheap one that came on the phone. That was a mistake, but I had the chance to be at that press conference, obviously, and I asked the question, you know, now you guys have a formal partnership. They played in Saskatoon. The Whitecaps came and played a friendly in Saskatoon against the Calgary Storm way back in 2004, maybe, or 2005, whenever the Storm existed. And so I asked the question, you know, now that they have a formal partnership, what are the odds that we will see the Whitecaps return to Saskatchewan? And Dan Leonarduzzi kind of chuckled for a second, remarked how he knew he was going to get in crap from the front office back in Vancouver for talking about this, but he mentioned that yes, we are definitely on the radar for them coming out and playing a friendly or two, maybe one between Saskatoon and Regina as well. So yeah, they want to be able to start bringing the team out and playing friendlies in the areas that they have the academies, because they obviously see that as a way to be able to inspire kids and say, hey, you know, not only are you able to see this the professional team, you can actually become part of this club's entire fold by going into the academy. There's actually a route for you to be able to aspire to reach this first team. So that was a very interesting little tidbit of information that Dan Leonarduzzi dropped at the press conference.
So Lars, you've been conspicuously silent through all this. Do you want to chime in quickly before we switch over?
I'd just say it sounds really good for Saskatchewan. It's good that HUSA, I think HUSA was their senior men's team. The HUSA alumni actually are the only Saskatchewan team to win the senior men's title
yep.
in this country. And that happened last year? Was that 2 years ago now? But it was first time in 99 years, wasn't it, that Saskatchewan had ever won it, so it's good to see that HUSA will be spearheading this initiative in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, absolutely.
So on to SSA reform. Jeff, you've got the skinny on that as well, I understand.
Yeah. So just this weekend was the Sask Soccer Association annual general meeting, and an extremely, extremely important set of changes took place at the core of the organization, of the association. The first one, now this is a little bit technical, but I'll try to explain it as best I can. So any nonprofit organization, and Lars, you might be able to chime in on this too, and correct me if I'm wrong in a little bit of this, but any nonprofit has to have a set of articles of incorporation, essentially speaking to what the nonprofit is going to govern over, essentially. And so the SAS Soccer Association traditionally only had three pieces to its articles of incorporation where it essentially stated that it was going to look over basically the soccer districts, any kind of soccer governing bodies that weren't necessarily districts but still covered a geographical area. And then finally, other things like the universities, for instance, so CIS soccer, they could govern over that. Now that three new ones have been added, which are critical, the first is basically recognizing every player and every player, coach, referee within the province as an actual member of the Saskatchewan Soccer Association, where traditionally it was only the soccer districts, so basically like the geographical districts throughout the province. A next one is recognizing all volunteers as being members, but the big one is recognizing entities, basically independent entities, as being members. And what these entities basically speak to are our academies. So Saskatchewan is taking a proactive approach to this in making sure that it can recognize individual academies as members of the association, so that now that we're seeing the rise of these academies within the province, we won't make the same mistakes that Ontario made and they're still facing today, where they did not really cooperate with any private academies and they're facing huge issues. I mean, huge issues right now. For instance, like Sigma, I'm pretty sure Sigma FC Academy, where Kyle Becker is from, is not recognized by the OSA. I'm pretty sure they are not recognized because they're an independent academy outside of the OSA umbrella.
They're part of SAAC, I believe.
Yeah,
Soccer Academy Alliance Canada.
Yeah, exactly. And so Soccer Academy Alliance Canada is not recognized within Ontario. And that's a big issue. That's a huge issue because now these kids are not allowed to be able to play against any other sanctioned organizations within the province of Ontario, whereas here in Saskatchewan, that's not going to be a problem. The association has recognized that it needed to evolve to recognize what the future is going to be, and it's done that. And so along with this, the big thing is now traditionally soccer throughout the country, all of the provincial associations only recognize their geographical zones or districts, if you will, as being members. So in the eyes of corporations, theoretically, Saskatchewan Soccer actually only had 56 actual members of the association, 56 individuals, so to speak, as members, which is crazy. If you're a corporation wanting to evaluate what sports to put dollars behind, sponsorship dollars behind, you're not going to choose soccer because you're not able to actually see the number of participants. There's too much risk involved in sponsoring soccer for what type of return you're going to get on that sponsorship. Now that they're recognizing all of these different areas and are going to be able to get actual numbers on this, SAS Soccer is now positioned in a place where it's going to be able to have massive bargaining power when it comes to getting sponsorship for the association. And that's huge because traditionally we see it on especially a national scale where we're not able to leverage participation numbers in a sponsorship return. Now SAS Soccer is going to be able to leverage every single person that has any relation to soccer whatsoever within the province going towards its ability to attract corporate sponsorship in order to grow the financial capacity of the association. And this is huge. This is not only going to hit just, you know, the kids playing, but even us geezers that are playing in the adult leagues are going to be able to see a benefit from this because the sponsorship is going to be able to extend not only to just the provincial association, but it's going to be able to trickle down through into the adult associations as well as the youth associations and in all the academies that are in this as well. Sorry for taking up such a large chunk. It's just, this is extremely monumental. When it comes to change in Canadian soccer, once again, Saskatchewan's leading the fold in doing something proactive. BC kind of did it, but they're facing a little bit of issues as well. But Saskatchewan has really learned from others' mistakes and is taking a very, very new but obvious approach filled with a lot of common sense to be able to do this. And so, yeah, we're going to sit up on a little bit of a pedestal right now because we deserve it.
Lars, do you want to chime in on
that? I had nothing to say.
Okay, I think Jeff just said it all. It was funny when you chimed in there for a second about, sorry to take so much time. I was like, you know what you're talking about, so you may as well go ahead. But it did sound kind of funny. After about a 10-minute solid soliloquy there, it was well said, though. Well said.
Yeah, well, I think people need to know, Canadian soccer fans around the country need to know that when things start changing in your own provinces, you got one province to look at for a lot, where a lot of these changes are coming from, and it's from Saskatchewan. So we might be in the traditional black hole, but let me tell you, we're the ones shining the light right now.
So the third week of MLS is in the books, or is there a game tomorrow? There's no game tomorrow.
No,
there's
no game tomorrow.
Okay, I thought they were done tonight.
Yeah, they're done tonight.
Had to check up on that. But it's been a pretty fascinating 3 weeks. It's been a fascinating 3 weeks for Canadian fans, fans of Canadian teams, or fans of all the Canadian teams. And we've got some talking points. I'd like to think back a little bit. I think we all were pretty confident that Montreal was going to be good this year. We are mostly confident that Vancouver is going to be decent. We are very unconfident in Toronto. And I think we have some talking points now on all of those. Some we can still agree with ourselves. In some cases, I think we disagree with our former selves. We went around to Jeff first, so let's go to Lars first. Biggest impact. Oh, that's I blew it, didn't I? Biggest impression. I need another IM word. Yeah, I don't think you can. biggest impression made on you in the first few weeks here and the week since our last podcast about MLS teams, Canadian MLS teams.
Actually, I'm going to go all the way back to week one. I was just floored with how Montreal played. Like, I had tagged Montreal as being the best of the Canadian teams and having a good, solid squad. But to go into Seattle and pull off, it was a 1-0 victory, and they, for the second half, all they did was defend, and it was ugly if you didn't appreciate the fact that Seattle is such a difficult place to win a game at. So not only did they go in and get a result, they got the win in Seattle. So I was just absolutely floored with how well Montreal was playing. And then they went and did it again in Portland. And, you know, it's not very often, I think we were mentioning before we even hit the record button, that this even happens in soccer, especially Major League Soccer, where you go into two extremely difficult road environments in a row and pull off wins in both of them. Where was I going with this? And now Montreal is, after beating Toronto FC, which I think just about everyone expected them to do, they're sitting in first place in the East and they're looking really good.
First in the league, aren't they?
First in the league. Yeah, yeah. First in the league.
And they're looking really good for the rest of the season already. Oh, I guess that depends on Nesta, who went down.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty bad injury there. And maybe you can talk about that or whatever, Jeff.
Is that a cue to me?
That is not just like a cue. That is a order. A cue would be... Yeah.
Yeah, no. He came off. Nesta came off very early. Very, very early in the match yesterday. In the 4-1 Derby yesterday, and had a bag of ice taped to his calf. I think it was his right calf. Right calf or right hammy? I think it was his right calf, but I can't 100% remember right now. But anyway, I haven't seen any updates yet. I don't think they put any updates about what his actual condition is. However, he came off so quickly that I suspect that it was an extremely... something bad is going to happen unless I get off the field right now, kind of preventative substitution and self-removal from the match. So I'm not too concerned that he won't be back next week. Well, maybe he won't be back next week, but I could definitely see him being back in 2 weeks, assuming it isn't a serious injury. It's probably a minor calf strain or minor pull. The way that he was able to walk and look fairly normal when he was coming off, so I don't think it was too bad of an injury. I don't see Montreal winning this weekend, even though they're playing at home. I think their D is going to give up something atrocious because Nest is gone. They're going to move Kamara into the middle and have Iepishino, who I think should be a name of a new Montreal coffee drink.
I had made that same comment, I think.
yeah.
Who was that cappuccino guy? But
yeah, exactly.
You know,
some coffee house needs to be smart and needs to create a drink called the Iepishino and market it to the ultras.
Nice.
They look like the bottom of the table team right now. Is what
they actually look. Toronto has looked more dangerous than San Jose has.
Yeah, I agree with that one 100%, and I hate TFC, but I agree with that one. So
maybe we should talk about TFC next.
Maybe we should, actually. Yeah, because I mean,
segue.
That is a good segue. The predictions were dire. Let me put it that way. We had them either bottom or second bottom, and they don't look bottom or second bottom. They don't
look third bottom now.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Well, yeah. I'm not saying that they look like world beaters, but they beat Kansas City, which is commendable.
It looked like wife beaters.
Yeah, jeez, wife beaters. That's terrible.
Not even funny, man.
You mean they were wearing undershirts under their jerseys?
No, I mean they have mustard stains under their jerseys.
All right, we're getting way off topic here now. Seriously, though, they looked decent against the Impact. They had opportunities to pull it level. And the Impact were playing well. I have to say the Impact second goal was pure class against Toronto. I think I texted the same to Lars right after it happened because it was just like tic-tac-toe goal. It was a very sweet goal. But besides that and the kind of Morgan bundling himself into, I can't remember who he fouled there.
Brazilian dude starts with an R. Romero.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He took out Romero.
Yeah. I mean, that was an obvious foul. It was an easy call. Mm-hmm. They looked like they defended decently. They had some chances going forward. Robert Earnshaw worked his rear end off the whole game. But not only that, he also looked dangerous at points. It wasn't just running. So I think they're going to surprise some people this year.
You know, just on that topic, the foul, it did cause quite a bit of controversy. I think it was the linesman who made the call, but Toledo, when he went to his linesman for that call, I actually thought both of them did the right thing. First, the linesman making the call, and Toledo backing up his linesman and actually calling it. The reality of the situation is Morgan needs to know what he's doing. He needs to be aware of where he's positioning himself and where he's running. Some people said that he was looking back and ran into the back of the Montreal attacker, but that doesn't matter. He knocked him down and prevented a clear scoring chance. That's a foul. That's a penalty kick. So I think that was the right call, and Toronto needs to do better. We got lucky, I think, with the dive that was given back the other way. Terry Dunfield went swimming and got a bad call in Toronto's favor later on as sort of a throwaway to Toronto, I guess. But to me, it was a clear foul for Morgan, and they need to do better.
You know, I want to just chime in on that as well. It was frustrating watching that foul. Because I agree with you, I thought it was a clear foul as well, but it was also a situation where, if Morgan had kept going the way he was going, he would have cut the guy's shooting lane off and ushered him towards the sidelines. He actually had to change course slightly to run into his back, right? And it just I boggled my mind. I was like, why is he even trying to go through him to get the ball there? He may as well just keep on the trajectory that he's going. So.
Yeah, no, he. You're right. He was goal side. Well, he was
playing catch up.
He was playing catch up. But he was on the goal side of him. He was on the goal side of him, and that was important. He at least could have, if Romero didn't immediately cross the ball into the box, he probably could have closed him down and at least held him there, so that the rest of the defense could have got back and you know been there to be able to prevent a real scoring chance from a ball played in from that position. So the fact that he actually crossed his back and took him out is just completely mind-blowing. Like, there was no reason for that at all. None. And the fact that he turned around and tried to, had that shocked look on his face, I'm like, son, I hope you're acting right now, because if you're serious, then the national team has a problem for its D in the future. So,
He probably should have just hung his head.
Yeah, well, if that was CONCACAF, he probably would have been given a red card or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Perhaps.
You know.
Yeah.
So enough on the negative. I mean, TFC's been beaten around and with good cause long enough. There are some positives. Let's talk about some positives with TFC.
Robbie Earnshaw. 3 goals in 3 games.
That's
yeah. Sorry, say that again, Jeff. I think you got cut off by Lars there.
Robbie Earnshaw is a positive for TFC. Have they ever had, I mean, Kuvermans could score, but Kuvermans scored when he was Johnny on the spot sometimes. Like, he didn't really create his own opportunities necessarily. He was always well positioned and was able to score from good positions. Earnshaw, on the other hand, is that type of forward that everybody sort of thought Ryan Johnson might have been, but wasn't, where he was really he was really a spark plug out there for them for their first set of matches already. He's been very good for them up front, and he's been able to create his own chances as well as be well positioned to allow people to play the ball to him so that he can have chances again. So I mean, that volley that he had, that half volley that he had in the first half, had he kept that down, he would have beat Perkins, because Perkins was in no man's land on that one. And had he kept that half volley down, it goes in the back of the net and TFC's one up.
Just one other point on Toronto. Let's talk about that Sporting Kansas game.
Yep.
And just how they completely shocked Kansas. Like, what happened? Like, we're talking about a team that was supposed to be competing at the top of the table with teams like Montreal now, and we're also talking about Toronto, which was supposed to be, you know, the league doormats, as we mentioned at the start of this, and Toronto just completely blew them out of the water.
You know, I'll tell you what's going on with SKC. Aurelien Colin is not match fit. I'll say this one right now. From watching KC's games, Aurelien Colin is not match fit. He has been their weakest link in their back line so far. And he was the one who got stripped by Earnshaw for the first goal. And he just did not have a good game against TFC that entire match. And he also, I didn't think, was particularly strong against Philadelphia in KC's first match of the season. He, I'd say, he was probably one of their weakest players on the pitch between both teams. So I think KC has maybe a few more issues than some people realize coming into the season, and Colin is one of them, which is shocking because Aurelien Colin, I think, was one of the highest-rated defenders all of last year.
Well, and I think the other side of that, if we want to talk about it from Toronto's standpoint, John Bostock has provided some width play.
Yeah.
Like, Toronto has never had width play. I know the Kellermans are probably laughing if they're listening to this, but, you know, they constantly harp on the fact that there's never any wingers. There has not been a legitimate winger, I think, since 2007 on this squad.
Yeah,
they might be laughing anyway.
Yeah, well, for other reasons, listening to me talk. But
No, it's probably because they don't understand our jokes.
Yeah, well, I don't understand our jokes. But yeah, I think it's been a surprising turn of events with Toronto FC. They look like a team I want to watch rather than a team that I suffer through watching, and that's been a good positive turnaround. We should probably get to Vancouver as well.
Yeah.
So the West Coast doesn't feel neglected. But
yeah, I was gonna say, you know, speaking of everything happening last week, let's move on to the Caps really quick, and I just wanted to kind of open things up with them if I could really quick and say, outside of Dego Kobayashi's absolute screamer that he hit last week, the opening goal, the Caps are not looking as solid as they did last year at the beginning of the season. They are still searching for their identity. They have a lot of new guys out there. The team chemistry isn't there yet. I will, though, go on record and say that their season is going to be a little bit of a flip from what it was last year. Last year, they came out of the gates flying, and they were really strong first half of the season and then really bottomed out in the second half because of the addition of the useless Scotsman. But this season, they are going to struggle, I think, in about the first third of this season as they work to find the right shape and the right pieces that they have on their roster for what their starting 11 needs to look like. But I think the last two-thirds, they're going to be extremely strong, and they're going to work their way up the table just like LA did last year. I see the Caps finishing top three in the West for sure. For sure, top three in the West, maybe even second. I doubt they'll challenge for first simply because LA has Robbie Keane and Mike McGee, who's the most underrated player in MLS in my point of view. But I definitely see them definitely third, probably challenging for second once they really find their footing. And they're going to be an extremely strong team in the latter two thirds of the season.
I'm just going to throw it out there. If your idea of not looking very strong is two straight wins, sign me up. I want Toronto FC to be not very strong all the time.
fair enough.
They beat Fair Columbus. Enough. Columbus is in third in the East, and they've looked really good if you've had a chance to watch them.
Yeah, no, I have. The thing is, though, is that, you know, there's a lot of really concerning things that are happening with the Caps, despite the wins. I mean, look, they had TFC at home for the first game of the season. That one was basically a guaranteed win because guys were literally coming off of a plane, hopping into another plane, and flying out to Vancouver to suit up for the first match of the season for TFC. So that one should have been. Had they not won that game, I think a lot of people would have been pressing the panic button, and the spotlight on Martin Rennie would have heated up to about 1,000 degrees from the media. But that second game against Columbus, that goal that they allowed Columbus really looked bad. When you watched how Columbus was able to part the seas for Vancouver's defense, it was hideous. I mean, they have a serious problem with Jay DeMeritt being out. The fact that Jay DeMeritt's gone, and he's gone, like he's not coming back this season. His Achilles is blown. He is gone. Forget about him for this season. If we see him next season, it will be a surprise to me because that kind of injury is probably just as bad, if not worse, for what Bex had at AC Milan before he joined the Galaxy. Like, he's done. So they have a major hole right now in D that I question whether they have a piece that's going to be able to replace DeMeritt. So I see the Caps leaking a lot of goals in the first third of the season and losing all of their road games until they can get that defensive position filled. And once they get that figured out, get their identity figured out, they're going to cruise for the rest of the season. So,
Being 6 points out of a possible six is a good problem to have, though. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they were two home wins, and I'm wondering if we could take as much from two home wins as we. Well, certainly we can't take as much from two home wins as we could from two wins in Seattle and Portland as Montreal pulled off, but.
Yeah, well, you could even tell when you watched the games, if you watched how Vancouver and Toronto played versus how Seattle. Like, I'm actually floored that Seattle is in last place in the West. But they have a tie, right? They've played one less game than everyone else, or not everyone else, but one less game. And, you know, Seattle, and when you watch that Seattle-Montreal game, it was basically the first half, Montreal dominated possession, dominated the play. Second half, Seattle dominated possession, dominated the play. But the difference was the sharpness in the passing, the defending, and how the teams generally looked when they played each other. Everything was very crisp. Everything looked like this was high-level MLS play. When you watch Toronto versus Vancouver, you know, this is where I can see where you're sort of coming from here, with Vancouver looking shaky. It was not crisp. You know, they got bailed out by a great substitution and a great player. I admit I was wrong on Nigel Real-Coker, but, you know, he came on and he made a huge difference. But up until that point, Vancouver looked lost. They looked like they didn't belong out there against Toronto FC, which was kind of embarrassing. But, you know, Vancouver has two home wins. If you win every single home game, you should make playoffs, I think. And Nico, to draw here or there, you could do that. Your concern is about the road results, and, you know, teams are going to get their road results. They might not be the wins that you want, but if you can win most of your home games, you should still make playoffs. It's as simple as that.
All right, Jeff here. Just wanted to do another little update regarding the hashtag challenge that, of course, we've been running since the previous episode. The hashtag, again, is TFC roster is like. So obviously this relates to the fact that the Toronto FC Clown College keeps changing its roster constantly week to week, and in fact is now reported saying, I believe it's Kevin Payne was reported saying that there's another potential 5 players that they're going to be signing within the next couple of weeks. So not only did they essentially fly guys in and then throw them on another plane so that they could play in Vancouver, but now there's potential another 5 players that are going to be coming in to add on to that roster still. So to get in on that hashtag challenge, what you want to do is on Twitter, make sure to tweet out hashtag TFC roster is like, and then the wittiest tweet that you can possibly think of to help make fun of our favorite Canadian club. Whoever comes up with the best one, which will be chosen by the 3 of us here at From the Black Hole, is going to end up winning themselves a 6-pack of their favorite beer, courtesy of From the Black Hole. Rob, I think you had something to kind of add on to that whole one of the players coming into TFC.
Oh, jeez. You're not really going to throw that to me.
Yeah,
okay.
Do it.
So here's obscure pop culture reference for people that are older than Jeff and Lars. One of the new potential TFC signings, Maximiliano, or what? How do you pronounce it? Urruti, right?
Urruti. Yeah.
It struck me as hilarious that his name was so close to Maximilian, and Maximilian, of course, was the evil robot from the old Disney Black Hole movie. It just all kind of, the synergy behind all those things was too much to pass up. So I'm gonna have to make some graphics of Maximiliano when he gets onto the TFC roster with whirring blades on his hands, cutting through his opponents and shredding them to bits. Hopefully he does.
That would be perfect.
And that last bit is a good example of why I try not to go on tangents on air. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back soon with episode 6. Take care. Talk to you soon.